Welcome to The Modern Urologist. I'm your host, Dr. Todd Cohen. And on today's episode, we're really fortunate to be joined by Dr. David Levy, who is not only an expert in the field of supplements to be used with prostate cancer, but also is a very close personal friend. Dave, I'd like to welcome you to The Modern Urologist.
Thanks. Happy to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, one thing I think our audience should know before we get really started is that you and I have known each other now for over 30 years. And I know we met during our training, like we've talked about when I was a child prodigy and you were much, much older than I was. yes, and I can even say, you know, very honestly, you know, Dave and I have known each other so well for so long that it was part of my wedding party and we've been good friends for decades now. But that's not why I have you here with us. You know, Dave, you have been very involved with research and treatment of prostate cancer and using the approach also, besides conventional means, of using supplements and vitamins, and have done extensive research in this area. So I'm going to stop talking and let you talk, but specifically, let's start talking about vitamin D. I know that was an area that you were very passionate about. So tell me about vitamin D and prostate cancer.
Sure. Well, I've been running prostate cancer nutrition clinics for the last 9 years. And I've seen somewhere in the neighborhood of about 600 patients with varying stages of prostate cancer that I have been able with other people participating. Implement a lifestyle adjuvant approach to their disease status. And the rationale and the biochemistry and so forth that goes behind that, it leads to the biochemistry of what's going on in the prostate cancer cells. And it does involve vitamin D metabolism. And what's interesting about vitamin D is vitamin D binds on chromosome 12, and it binds right next to where the androgen receptor is. And it's believed that vitamin D binding so close to the androgen receptor has downstream genetic regulation activities on androgen receptor activity and subsequent intracellular metabolism of androgen and subsequent biochemistry of the disease. And there have been a number of publications dating back to the late 1990s, 1997, Journal of National Cancer Institutes, on how vitamin D levels, serum levels, actually inhibit prostate cancer cell growth as well as angiogenesis and metastasis.
Now, when you're talking about, I'm going to interrupt you here for a sec. When you talk about levels, what kind of, just the normal physiologic levels, or are you aiming for something higher than that?
So it's been studied, and basically what's agreed upon in most of the literature is that serum levels below 20 are considered significantly deficient. And serum levels, we've aimed for serum levels between 50 and 60. And an easy way to dose vitamin D is basically 27 times your body weight gives you the general daily dose of what vitamin D intake should be. Well, is that pretty much across the population? And what's interesting is if you measure vitamin D pretty much across the population in the U.S., at least in the northern half of the country, universally everybody is going to be deficient. They're going to have serum levels that are pretty consistently below 30. And what the literature supports, based on PSA level correlates, biopsy outcomes in terms of correlating positive prostate biopsies with deficient vitamin D levels and higher serum vitamin D levels, Gleason score, all higher vitamin D serum levels correlate with lower PSAs about 30% of the time, lower likelihood of positive biopsy and lower Gleason scores, and a significant number of publications that are out there. So based on what has been seen in large population-based studies in the country is high as over 70,000 people tested in the Veterans Administration studies. Pretty much all these people that have lower serum vitamin Ds are at higher risk for positive biopsies and more aggressive cell behavior, more aggressive cancer behavior patterns.
Have you seen any difference in that race correlates with African Americans versus, with vitamin D and any of these, or has that been even looked at as far as you know?
The African American population by and large compared to the non-African American population is going to have universally lower vitamin D levels. Okay. So supplementing vitamin D kind of across the board is fairly consistently agreed upon as being beneficial. And in our study that we published in October, we did indeed find a statistically significant correlate between serum vitamin D and PSA trends in our study population. So I think pretty consistently, vitamin D has been tied to the biochemistry of the cancer cell behavior. But that in and of itself is not going to be sufficient in terms of altering the disease course. It's going to be helpful, but there are other parameters that go into it as well.
Of course. Now, when you see a patient in your clinic, when you're doing, prostate cancer and nutrition, you said you saw all the spectrum, I'm sure, from localized disease to advanced disease. Well, with vitamin D supplementation and others, what do you talk to them? Start with the localized and go to the more advanced, if you would.
So the guys that come in that have family history of disease or that have elevated PSAs, negative biopsies, and it's often the case that they say, hey, doc, is there anything that I can do that might decrease my risk of, getting a positive biopsy going forward? And I think the answer to that is yes, and it really gets into dietary patterns and supplements. And the reason the dietary patterns figure into it is because when you look at populations across the globe, India, China, and Japan have the lowest rates of prostate cancer per 100,000 population compared to U.S., England, Germany, France, Norway, Sweden, any other developed country. And when you look at the omega-3, omega-6 fatty acid ratios in those populations, India, China, and Japan, they have a substantially lower animal protein intake, which means their omega-6 fatty acid levels in their blood are much lower, and their omega-3, omega-6 ratios are considerably different than what we have here in the U.S.
The omega-3 is fish, isn't it? Fish oil?
Well, that's a component. So the omega-3 is EPA, DHA, and DPA are the basic three components of omega-3 fatty acid. And omega-6 is primarily obtained in our populations through the consumption of animal-based protein, not chicken. Chicken's an omega-3, omega-6 neutral, chicken breast. But the dark meat has higher omega-6. So red meat and any processed meat, salami, bologna, hot dogs, sausage, those things are going to be very high in omega-6. And what ends up happening is in the U.S., the average omega-3, omega-6 ratio in the serum is about 1 to 10 or 1 to 20. But that average ratio in India, China, and Japan is about 1 to 4. So there have been some small pathology studies done in the U.S. where they looked at omega-3 supplementation versus not in prostate cancer specimens. And what they found was 6 weeks of omega-3 supplementation can reduce prostate cancer cell cycle progression by about 30% in 6 weeks on pathologic specimens. So one of the components in terms of the biochemistry of the disease behavior, it seems to be linked to not only the vitamin D serum levels, but omega-3, omega-6 ratios. And what we found was if you lower the ratio to about 1 to 5, which is achievable by changing meat consumption and, you know, animal protein. That includes yogurt, dairy, cheese, ice cream, butter, that sort of thing.
Ice cream is bad? Oh, damn, you had to tell me that. Okay, I'm sorry.
Got to get the vegan ice cream, Todd. I've been telling you for a while now.
Have you had vegan ice cream, though?
So if you change the omega-3, omega-6 ratios, and you can, we were able to achieve that, you know, in almost 500 guys that we tested it. We're pretty convinced that you're going to lower the cell cycle progression, and that by chance can decrease likelihood, we hope, of achieving a diagnosis, or if they're diagnosed, even with castrate-resistant disease, what we saw was a relative stabilization in PSA and in a slowing of progression over the 7 years when I was at the Cleveland Clinic. So the vitamin D, the omega-3, omega-6 ratio manipulation, and you know, we also use turmeric curcumin because curcumin has four different biochemical reactions in the prostate that have significant impact on cell behavior based on what's published in the literature.
Okay, so when a patient comes in and they're not diagnosed with prostate cancer, like you were starting, like you said, and they want to know what can lower, you tell them to, you know, from dietary changes, eat less meat, red meat, or dark meat, chicken. And if they have to have meat, do fish. But, you know, how about, you know, people talk a lot these days, plant-based diet.
Right.
Is that something you recommend, or as best you can kind of thing?
So the basic premise of what I tell them is Mediterranean diet, primarily, you know, fruits and veggies, cold water fish. So those are really the cornerstones of the diet. And because the chicken breast is omega-3, omega-6 neutral, they can have all the chicken breasts they want. And turkey off the bone is the same. But turkey breast from the deli, when it's a processed meat product, is going to start adding up the omega-6. So the Mediterranean diet seems to be, it achieves a couple goals. One, it's easy for the patients to stick to it over long periods of time, rather than telling them be 100% plant-based. When they're 100% plant-based, protein intake tends to be a little bit of a challenge, because getting all the protein from plants alone is a bit of a challenge, and they can be compromised in their protein intake. And soy protein or tofu is a little bit of a concern because of a soy estrogen testosterone pathway. So we try and keep soy protein down to about 8 grams of soy protein a day. So we don't want their main protein intake to be soy. We also don't want it to be whey protein, because that is basically a dairy product. So pea protein from a plant base is a really good choice. People can use other protein sources. Collagen mixes are out there, and collagen powders and that sort of thing. But being 100% plant-based for some people is quite challenging. So we add in some wiggle room by saying, listen, you can have all the chicken breasts you want. You can have turkey breasts. Grass-fed meat products actually have lower omega-6 than animals that are grain-fed. So there is something to that. So if they're going to have they want to have a meat product, a steak or ground beef, what have you, 2 or 3 times a month, we say, fine, go ahead. We found that it did not alter omega-3, omega-6 ratios over time. And we prefer to have them use a grass-fed product in that setting.
All right. So it's a great diet for a lot of things. Now, the omega-3s as well, from what my understanding, are not just protective, I guess, for prostate cancer, but for mental deterioration, for, you know, dementia and the prevention of Alzheimer's. Is that, you know, does that come up in conversation, or is that really, you know, not part of it as much as well?
So we don't get into that aspect of it in the office, but, you know, myelin sheath and, you know, the components of the CNS that require fatty acids, right? So the omega-3s should support, but we don't really get into that much of that kind of discussion in the office. But I think the data are plentiful in what's published in the literature that this type of dietary pattern correlates to breast, ovarian, colon cancers, and there are a number of other cancers that seem to have close ties to the impacts of omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids, and even vitamin D levels on the other cell biologies. But for prostate cancer, I think there's a pretty substantial peer-reviewed published literature that supports it.
So what about, you know, you mentioned that this is also true. You talk to your advanced prostate cancer guys about this as well as vitamin D. Anything more on the advanced side? I'll throw in a second question if you can at the same time. Anything with all the genetic information, the hereditary, you know, BRCA1, BRCA2 that correlates anything with diet or nutrition or supplements that you can speak of?
So I think the answer to that is yes, and it's evolving. So there are a number of single nucleotide polymorphisms, which are specific DNA protein products that are generated that have been shown through nutrition-based studies that one can alter the production of single nucleotide polymorphisms that are specifically tied to different disease entities. So as the genetic understanding of these cancers progresses, and we know at this point that the genetic behavior of prostate cancer, for example, can change during treatment, where some agents that are employed early on may no longer become effective as the patient's going through their course of treatment because of genetic alterations of the cell populations. So I think there are changes that occur genetically during one's time frame of having the disease that will impact disease behavior and progression or stagnation. And in that regard, because the single nucleotide polymorphism production or liberation of these different proteins can change when you change the dietary patterns and the supplements that you're giving these people will impact on single nucleotide polymorphisms. As the genetics of the disease changes, any adjuvant activity you can have, whether they're castrate resistant or not, I think improves their survival with the disease. And I think that's being looked at, but those studies aren't at all conclusive at this time. But the groundwork and the framework that's been laid for that possibility, I think, exists, and I think it's very right.
So do you think that from what you've seen, there's not enough knowledge in this area in the general urologic, you know, treatment population that, you know, we need to educate physicians or urologists that are treating this more, especially out, you know, all over, because you hear about this and we know that everybody's talked about vitamin D is good. I mean, Mark Moyad's been saying that since you and I were children, I think. And, but it really hasn't resonated that much that this should really be part of the treatment.
I think that what you're saying is right. I mean, go back to medical school. How many classes did we have on nutrition? Zero.
Zero.
Right? And I don't think it's really part of a core curriculum now in medical school education. Is it a part of residency training now? Not that I'm aware of. I don't think it's anywhere on the board exams. I don't think it's on the in-service exams for residents either. But at this point, I don't think there's any way you can ignore the benefit or the potential impact that this is going to have going forward with the genetic understanding of the disease in terms of treatment. I just don't think there's any way this can be ignored.
All right. So vitamin D, omega fatty acids, getting the right ratios down and decreasing your red meat or a dark poultry. What else? You mentioned turmeric curcumin. Can you talk a little bit more about that and, you know, where people can get that type of a supplement, or, you know, besides just looking for the vial at CVS or GNC that says curcumin on it? You know, can they get it naturally? And is there anything else that you would recommend?
Yeah, there are a couple things. So the cornerstone of the curcumin is it does four basic things that are important in prostate cancer biology. It impacts on hypoxia-inducing factor 1 alpha. It impacts on the mammalian target of rapamycin, the mTOR inhibitor. It impacts on the diclofenoc and linoleic fatty acid pathways in the cells. And it impacts on mesenchymal epithelial cell transformation.
So, okay, now say that in English for the rest of the people out here.
So we know that curcumin has biochemical specificity in prostate cancer biology, okay? And you can get it in pretty easy to take formulations at Walgreens and CVS and Target and so forth, because they sell it in the vitamin section. And what's also interesting in that is there's another prep that's out there that's called Zyflamend. And Zyflamend was studied pretty intensely. It's a 10 poly herbal compound. And it was studied pretty intensely by a nutritional oncologist from Nashville, Tennessee. And he worked out the biochemistry of this, and it's published in the medical literature. Zyflamend ramps up liver kinase B1 and adenosine monophosphate kinase. And it turns out that those two enzymes are substantially suppressed in prostate cancer, in ovarian, in breast, and colorectal carcinomas. But when you take that supplement, which is over the counter, you can buy it in most grocery stores, and you significantly increase liver kinase B1 and AMP kinase, you can get significant PSA response, even in castrate-resistant population. Curcumin is part of that 10-poly herbal compound. What wasn't spelled out in that research was exactly what components of the 10-poly herbal compound were paramount in impacting on LKB1 and AMP kinase. So curcumin seems to have in the literature a recurrent pattern of statistical impact on the biochemistry of the cells. And, you know, I tell everybody to take 2,000 milligrams a day, and it's literally in a prep that you can buy at CVS or Target or Walgreens. And there are really no downsides to taking it. I've only had a handful of patients that had any kind of GI distress. But the biochemistry and the anti-cancer activity, if you did a Google search or just look at PubMed, you're going to come up with thousands of peer-reviewed articles that support curcumin and its anti-cancer activity.
It's also, I mean, it's a pretty good anti-inflammatory as well. I mean,
correct. It's a naturally occurring COX-2 inhibitor. And if you remember Celebrex years ago, and I believe they had to take it off of the market because there were some cardiac side effects and it was perhaps reformulated, but that was a COX-2 inhibitor. It was engineered that way. So curcumin is a naturally occurring with no cardiac toxicity.
All right, so there's the curcumin part. Any other supplements or things that you would, that you typically would recommend to a prostate cancer patient, or, you know, somebody that wants to try to avoid getting prostate cancer, besides those?
So the downside to that question is, you well know as well as I do, there's all kinds of things advertised that's out there. But the unfortunate thing is a lot of those really haven't been studied. And I really can't make any kind of suggestive comments to say, take this one or that one. But there are oodles of them out there. The only thing we can really say from what's peer-reviewed and supported in the literature is vitamin D, a Mediterranean-style diet, because it impacts on omega-3, omega-6, supplementing omega-3 with a quality fish oil product, and curcumin, have all been pretty heavily supported in numerous peer-reviewed manuscripts.
There was also, years ago, there was always that thought about zinc and selenium. Any comments about those? I know they really haven't kind of lived up to the hype, but what can you tell me about those?
So a lot of people ask questions about that, and I caution them, and I talk a little bit about the SELECT trial, the selenium vitamin E trial. But what's interesting about that is, you know, one of my colleagues at Cleveland Clinic said, well, listen, the SELECT trial was done, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, but when they did the trial, did they control for diet? So if they're eating bratwurst and you know, barbecued ribs and sausage all day, but they're doing, you know, selenium or vitamin E, can it have an impact? I believe that you have to change the environment in which the cells live. So the Mediterranean diet and getting rid of the dairy component and taking some of the supplements changes the cellular environment and therefore the behavior of the cells. So I don't really recommend high levels of vitamin E at this point. It really hasn't been studied enough to make that recommendation. And I don't think right now there's a role for selenium that, you know, someone could really argue to be part of a regimen right now.
Yeah, well, thanks. Dave, this has been absolutely fascinating. And it's information that I think not enough people talk about. And it's such an important aspect of prostate cancer care. I think people can also understand from our discussion that, you know, during our residency, you were always the brains of the duo when we were together. So I think that's been pretty obviously shown today. And I want to thank you for your time, your expertise. And, you know, from a personal side, I look forward to seeing you, you know, pretty soon. Thank you so much for your time. Send my love to your lovely wife and your family, and I will speak to you pretty soon. And I know that our audience will just be thrilled with the information that you provided for us today.
Appreciate it, and I'm glad to see that your gray hair is finally catching up to me.
Oh no, I was looking at saying you've got lots of it. If I turn around, you'll see the skin on the back of my head pretty obviously, which is why I always walk backwards when I'm leaving people. So, all right, David, just take care and thanks so much.
Take care.